Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm thrilled to be here today moderating today's webinar on how to ensure policies and procedures are being followed in the office. Companies in the credit collection industry are inundated with policies and procedures, those from clients and vendors, as well as those from all of the regulatory guidance requirements at the state and federal level. But how do companies ensure that those policies and procedures are being followed? In today's webinar, we've got a panel of leading experts from the credit collection industry with us to share their insights and strategies into making sure that all employees are following the proper policies and procedures. At a time when even the most technical violation can lead to fines and class action lawsuits, making sure that policies and procedures are being followed has never been more important. This webinar is being sponsored by Ontario Systems. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. At least that's what my mother tells me. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Alicia McKeegan is the Chief Compliance Officer at AFME Inc. She has been in the industry for 10 years and has experience building and enhancing AFME's compliance management system. She also has experience with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, and Fair Credit Reporting Act litigation and regulatory licensing. She is a member of ACA International Federal Affairs Committee and holds a credit and collection compliance officer designation with ACA International. Paige Tortorich has more than 14 years of auditing experience and is a current member of ACA International and Inside ARM's Compliance Professionals Forum. She's been an auditor in different industries, but found her home in the vast compliance world of collections, where she has spent the past 5 years. She was an external auditor for more than 2 years, conducting remote and on-site audits for third-party collection agencies, and is now an internal audit manager at ERC. Paige's time on both sides of the audit table provide her with the experience to know which audit should be done and why. Sarah Wagerman is the lead in-house compliance consultant for Ontario Systems. She provides consulting solutions for banks, collection agencies, and other financial services providers to prepare them for regulatory examinations, manage litigation risk, and improve the consumer experience. Sarah has more than 11 years in the accounts receivable management industry, managing nearly 200 collection service providers for debt purchasers and serving as a relationship manager to creditors. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We'll encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available later today on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I just wanted to ask everyone to prepare themselves to take a minute to fill out a feedback survey that should pop up on your screen after today's webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to participate in the survey. Providing your feedback helps me develop content that's what you're looking for and to find the speakers, much like the ones we have today, who are the people you absolutely need to be hearing from. So thank you in advance for that. With that, let's launch into our discussion today. Sarah, we're going to give you the honor of the first question. How important is it to follow policies and procedures? Does every agency, have to follow 100% of what they're supposed to do? And you know, what is the worst case scenario for an agency that is not following policies and procedures?
Well, thanks, Mike. To start off, I think that's it's really a critical part of any organization's compliance management system to be following your policies and procedures. Don't go through all this time drafting policies and procedures to simply not follow them, right? And so is it realistic that every organization across the board can ensure that they are following every documented policy and procedure perfectly all the time? Of course not, but that's why proactive auditing and monitoring controls are so important to identify those gaps, adjust when necessary, and remediate nonconformities as they arise. And as for, you know, the worst case scenarios, you know, those can range, and I bet Alicia or Paige might have some, feedback on that piece of it as well. So, Alicia?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, Sarah. So, it really depends on the extent of the issue with the policies and procedures and what's not being followed. But you could start getting multiple complaints that would increase your overall complaint management system need. That could alert clients to different issues. It could go as far as triggering supervision with all of the complaints and having some type of CFPB examination as a result, or even going to enforcement from the complaints and having a CID issued, a civil investigation demand. So there are different degrees of severity for not following the policies and procedures, but one thing you want to ensure is that you have a good pulse on the complaints that are being received, the risk that's being produced as a result of the policies and procedures that are not being followed, and know what the outcome of that is.
Excellent. Thank you. Paige, let me ask you, the same question, I guess. How important is it at your company that everybody follows 100% of the policies and procedures?
Well, it's extremely important. It's going to provide you legal protection, as Alicia was saying, and you can use your time and resources more efficiently if you're not having to micromanage those employees. They have the policies and procedures in place. They should know what they are doing, and they should be easily accessible. So if it's the agent on the floor, there should be, like, on their system, be able to look up any document to see what that process is. And as far as worst case scenarios, like Alicia was saying, you have your regulatory fines, you have findings from your external audits. You would hate for a client to come in and normally they request this policy in advance. So when they come in and they're talking to your agents and they're talking to the different departments, and you have something written down in your SOP stating one thing, but then the manager of the department or one of their employees is saying something completely different, you want, everyone to follow those SOPs.
Now, I know I asked each of you for the worst case scenario, and I'm going to guess the answer to the next question is it depends. But can you give us a range or an idea of sort of what the usual penalty or what the usual outcome is if you find a situation where a policy or procedure is not being followed? Sorry, I forgot to put somebody on the spot. Alicia, would you mind taking that one first?
Yeah, no problem. I didn't want to talk over anybody. I think that, there's a range. Like I said earlier, it really depends on the severity of the risk that's being posed by the policy and procedure not being followed. So, it really could depend. One of the things that we've kind of glossed over in all of this is litigation. And so, that could be something that also ensues because your agents aren't following policy and procedure, your management is it, and that has such a wide range of monetary costs to you. It could be something as simple as $1,000, probably not likely, in terms of statutory FDCPA violations. TCPA can be enormous fines. So I think it really just depends on what are the policies and procedures not being followed and what risk are those posing to your company as a result.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. In most cases, agencies are smaller companies, not large companies with robust compliance departments and legal departments. So with smaller agencies, what recommendations do you have if they don't necessarily have a robust compliance and or auditing department? Whose job should it be to make sure policies are being followed in the office? Is that something where it's the CEO, or should that be delegated to somebody else? Does anyone want to have any suggestions or recommendations on that?
I can jump in here, Mike.
Sure, go ahead.
So, I actually, my consulting services role has given me a unique opportunity to work with just dozens and dozens of small agencies. And this is a very common struggle. And in this situation, I typically recommend kind of a three-pronged approach, right? So first you would want to If you're looking at, okay, how do I monitor? I've just built these policies and procedures. Now I have to audit to them. This is usually where things get stressful because you go through all this work and then, okay, do I have resources? So the first step really is to identify what technology controls you have access to or could implement, right? For example, you can do a lot with exception reporting to monitor things like call frequency limitations, allowable call times, calls made to cell phone numbers without express consent, you know, lots of things like that. Or utilize, you know, resources like speech analytics to identify nonconformities. You can also identify if your collection software can manage complaint and dispute tracking and resolutions for you. So those are some, the first step is, okay, how can we, you know, automate some of these processes when there's resource limitations, excuse me. Then determine, you know, the resources within the organization that are the furthest away from operations. And I say that because we know that, you know, the CFPB quite specifically has said that there should be a separation in these functions. And that becomes increasingly challenging when you are a smaller company. So, you know, identify those roles by maybe perhaps you have an administrative role that could assume some account level auditing responsibilities. Or, you know, you could have somebody in accounting reviewing authorization scripts that are happening on the floor. There's all sorts of ways that you can get creative with this so that you're not self-auditing, you know, your role all the time in a small company. And then finally, if you have to incorporate operations into this monitoring responsibility, and they should share some of that responsibility. Don't get me wrong. It's not that operations is free of this. But if you have to share this responsibility and they have to take some of it, then whoever is the lead compliance role for the company, there should be ongoing calibrations to ensure that operations is looking for the right things, that risks are being proactively identified and not being glossed over, and that there's some sort of, you know, cadence to that to where you can ensure that, you know, everyone's on the same page. And if finally, if you still don't feel like you are auditing everything or that you can't possibly monitor all aspects because of your resource limitations, it may be wise to consider, you know, actually bringing in a third party to help you with that type of stuff. There's lots of companies that do that. I offer that service personally. There is a lot of opportunity out there where you can get a third party to come in and really help you through some of those auditing and monitoring roles.
Wow. Awesome. Excellent answer. Thank you very much. Alicia Page, anything you want to add on top of that?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Alicia.
You both waited and you ended up talking over.
You know what? We're both so excited about it is what it is. My statement was just going to be simple and just that, you know, the CFPB really expects that there's proper board and management oversight. And so for a smaller agency, I know that that means something a little bit different. Perhaps there isn't a board. And so you're just working with senior managers or, you know, VPs. But, you know, ultimately, the individuals that have responsibility for the company need to be included in the understanding of risk that's occurring and allocating resources properly. So as Sarah said, I like some of the ideas that she had provided on, you know, removing some element of operations from the auditing, but still being able to get some of the audits done in management and in your board or, you know, whatever entity is in place of that needs to be involved in that decision-making process and, you know, reinforcing that throughout the organization.
Excellent. Thank you. At this point, I just want to pause the discussion and remind everybody that today's webinar on ensuring policies and procedures are being followed in the office is being sponsored by Ontario Systems. In nature, evolution tends toward the complex. In the arm industry, companies evolve by simplifying their operations. Ontario Systems, the leader in arm technology, helps you move past integration into true optimization, where you'll be free to compete on a whole new level. From its intelligent collections platform and cloud-based contact management to the latest omni-channel solutions for texting consumers and accepting payments online, go beyond integration with Ontario Systems. To learn more, please visit www.ontariosystems.com/go-beyond-integration. Thanks again to Ontario Systems for sponsoring today's webinar. Paige, wanted to come back to you, and, you know, with respect to, you know, there's a large number of different policies and procedures that a collection agency is going to have. Should they be checked at different intervals? You know, and what I mean, I guess, is are there policies that should be checked every week and others that need to be checked every year? And how do you go about sort of determining that frequency?
Yes, they should definitely be checked regularly. And what we do at ERC is and this is starting with a client-specific SAPs because we have a lot of them. Anytime a new handbook comes out, MSA, addendum, anything like that, it comes to the internal audit department. We use like Nitro PDF. We can compare it to the old version, or if it's a new version, we break it down. We send it out to the business owners, have them review those changes because now their process has changed. They have to update their SAP, send it back to us. We review it, say, yes, okay, this has been updated. So that's how we ensure that we are keeping up with the client changes. And as far as the regular changes, just ERC standard that doesn't fall into this client-specific requirements, we like to at least review those annually. But as clients audit us as well, we've already gone through 63 external audits this year. So there are a lot. And as you all know, a lot of those clients request pretty much every policy you have. So we review those policies before they go out just to make sure that they have been reviewed in the last 6 to 12 months and that they match the processes that we have in place. So that's another way that we are making sure that those policies are in place and up to date. And then we also have annual audits that we do to make sure that those client-specific requirements and the ERC requirements meet all of our client requirements. So we have several different items that we do. And then we also have a department in our compliance department who ensures if that hasn't been updated in 12 months and for some reason this hasn't been requested by one of our external audits, that those are being checked to make sure that they're accurate as well. Oh, and then any changes that we do make to our SAPs, if it's going to affect a department who was not in this process, we'll send out hot topics via email, and it is posted on our SharePoint site of any changes that we've done, just to make sure that those agents are aware of any changes that we make.
So is all of that done sort of automatically, meaning like, you know, if there's a policy and procedure that needs to be checked annually or every 6 months, you know, when it comes up, there's an alert that pops up on someone's screen saying today's the day that this has to be checked, and it sort of gets integrated into the workflow? I mean, is that how it gets done?
Yeah, in our SharePoint system, all of our SAPs are housed, so anyone can access those standard operating procedures, and those are the only SAPs that we should use. They should not be saved on anyone's computer because those are the most up-to-date documents, and we can export that information into a spreadsheet, and you can highlight, like, all of the ones that are over a year old, or you can just sort and say, you know, you want to look at any SAPs that are over 12 months old, and so the compliance department is working on those SOPs to make sure that those are staying up to date. And then we also, in the SharePoint system, we can link the SOP to whatever CMS policy that it's related to. So if it's regarding our vendor management program, CMS, any vendor SOPs are linked to that CMS policy. So it's very easily to manipulate to see what's been expired, what is linked to which CMS policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if Alicia, I could just, follow up with Paige's point, and this isn't directly on point with the question that's being asked, but I do think what Paige is talking about with the SharePoint, we also at AFNI utilize that. And, you know, the ability that SharePoint has to provide you metadata and information, you can, you know, upload your policies and procedures to SharePoint based on keywords, so they're searchable by keyword by your representatives. And it brings an organization level to your policies and procedures that is a real useful tool in auditing the effectiveness, the age. So I just wanted to kind of reinforce that SharePoint item. And then also in terms of how to know which ones you should be checking. So in everything that Paige has described, that is a great process, and we mostly follow that process as well. But I think another element to add to that is in your monitoring. So maybe not your large internal audits that you're doing, you know, monthly or at a frequency on different topics, but in just your regular monitoring of phone calls, of, you know, your back office support work. If there are trends and different things coming up from that monitoring, you want to focus on those policies and procedures as well to ensure they're effective, because there's no point in having the policies and procedures if they're not effective and not being utilized as intended.
Can you give me an example? You know, how you sort of someone would notice that trend and how it sort of ties back to the appropriate policy and procedure?
Yeah, sure. So let's just take payment handling, for example. So if you have a policy and procedure dictating how your agents are going to comply with Regulation E while they're on the phone, and in your normal monitoring, when you're monitoring payments, you're noticing, you know, either, you know, the representative is missing the script, or the script is incorrect, or, you know, they're forgetting to confirm a couple different pieces that you need for Regulation E, you want to go back to your policy and procedure and say, okay, is this documented correctly? Is this effective to communicate the expectations? And then you also want to look at your training as well.
Okay. Sarah, on this topic, is there, you know, with the experience you've had with all with different collection agencies of different shapes and sizes, is there anything you want to add on top, any more perspective?
No, I think I think Paige and Alicia just made some excellent points, and I really love the walkthrough Alicia just did. You know, whenever you are determining, let's say, your audit or monitoring schedule, it's going to be completely based on the risk of the nonconformity with the policy, right? And the risk scale can vary by organization depending on what activities you engage in when collecting consumer debt, right? So, you know, it's really important as you write your policies and procedures to really understand, and we could probably have a webinar completely on how to understand what your risk level is, but to really understand truly what that risk is. If you mainly communicate via phone calls using an auto dialer, and you are pushing out hundreds of thousands of calls on an auto dialer, anything related to TCPA is a high risk item, right? Because of the magnitude, the volume of events, all right, that could happen, that could end up as a class action lawsuit. So that might be something that you are having exception reporting and auditing on a daily basis, right? I would say that anyone who has collectors talking to consumers is always going to be a high risk activity because of what they do on the phone. So that's something you should be ongoing auditing all the time. You might be checking other elements on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, every 6 months, once a year, right? So I think that really the key to success here is understanding really what your risk level is when it comes to each one of these policies that you draft.
And I agree with Sarah 100%. We are big, huge on exception reports. We have tons of them. Internal audit runs a lot of them, but also the specific departments run exception reports, like the dialer. You think you have all of these controls in place and you're like, oh yeah, we're good. What happens if that control breaks? Or what happens if you change a process over here and it breaks something down the line? So that exception report is zero every day, and then all of a sudden you have 15,000 accounts that have been dialed outside of like the state requirement or whatever that might be. So, and another thing for the smaller agencies, if you can create these exception reports, like the ones that just have zero findings, we know that there's no issues with them. She tracks those every day. She follows up for any remediation. And of course, if it's something that's a massive finding, you know, she would reach out to someone else to assist. But I mean, we probably send out, I think, 75 individual exception reports a month, just an internal audit. And she would handle probably 75% of those.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. Sarah, going back to your point when understanding risk level, you know, when you were looking at or what you were talking about, I think it's really interesting. Do you recommend that an agency sort of look at everything it does and assess the risk and then sort of determine sort of the number of times it needs to check the policy and procedure based on that threat level or that risk level?
Yeah, I certainly do. So something we talk about a lot when we do our compliance gap assessments is we have an entire section dedicated to identifying what audit controls you have, the monitoring controls, but then there's a separate element, which is, are you at least doing an annual risk assessment, right? And oftentimes these terms get intermixed. And so, and it's interesting because if you are somebody who has studied the CFPB examination manual, they sort of use them interchangeably and it can actually be somewhat confusing. So, what I've been trying to do, with my clients is really describe what a risk assessment really is. So a risk assessment is you stepping back from everything that you've done, all your auditing, monitoring controls, and identifying what your risk levels are for each of these different areas, right? Your payment processing, your reporting structure, your organization, your complaint management, right? And understanding your risk levels to determine if changes need to be made to your policies and procedures or additional controls, auditing, monitoring need to happen for those. So these are actually different functions. Risk assessment is, your much higher view of checking back everything in your whole company to identify your different risk levels. Does that help?
Okay, thank you.
I just make
it
really confusing. Okay.
No. Well, I'm naturally confused. So, but I don't use that as a barometer for whether everybody else is going to be.
The next webinar will be on how to build your risk assessment. How about that?
Or how to make Mike less confused would be a good one too. Paige and Alicia, going back to something you both mentioned, you talk about policies and procedures, and people envision these dusty manuals on a shelf in the storeroom somewhere. But when you mentioning SharePoint. Do you actually have hard copies of them, or is everything online these days? And is everything sort of in a SharePoint or in some sort of wiki or something like that? Is that how there's an agency should store it?
Yes, sir. I know at ERC we have everything online. SOPs have to be uploaded into our SharePoint system, and that does not mean that they're published. It has to go through our compliance department. They have to review it and approve it before it's published for other people to see. And once it's in that SharePoint system, you can go in and you can check it out, you can make changes to it, and then again, it has to, compliance is notified, they have to review it and then approve it to make sure it meets all of our requirements. So everything is online.
And same for us too. I mean, all the same protections that were just mentioned. And again, it's the ability to search by keyword. So again, the policies are usable, they're effective. There's version control, so you can document exactly what changed from one policy to the next. There's approval processes. You can set, your different policies to different statuses for groups to review. And you don't have the ability, your agents don't really have the ability to then take those policies and procedures and modify them or to keep an old copy because it's updated live every time a change is made. And there's different communications that you can send that, cascade from those changes being made. So there is a lot of advantage in the SharePoint solution or something similar where it's digital, it's version controlled, it's restricted, but it's still very accessible and user-friendly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
yep, go ahead.
I agree with you know, the statements they both made. We also utilize SharePoint. It's a very useful tool here at Ontario Systems. But for smaller agencies who maybe don't have access to that, I do still run into paper manuals on desks from time to time. There are cost-effective ways. If you're not ready to step into a tool like a SharePoint site to get away from paper. If you can avoid paper, I would do it for a couple of reasons. One, when you change things, I mean, those could be outdated, you know, and then you have these outdated policies floating around your office. So that does give you a bigger risk factor of just people being confused, right? But you can have a shared drive that where these are locked down and only make them viewable. You know, I've seen clients have risks of people leaving with their policies and procedures, leave the building with them. You really don't want that with printed forms as well. So there are ways that you could centralize this in a more cost-effective way if you're not ready to jump to a tool that's going to help you manage that. And you can do version control and things like that through Adobe. So those are all options as well.
Okay, excellent. So I know, you know, that nobody listening now or the recording or none of our panelists, there's never been an issue with any audits. Everything's always come back thumbs up 100%. Everybody's always compliant. But in the, you know, in a hypothetical world, when something does go wrong or policy and procedure is not being followed, what types of remediation plans should an agency have when an issue is, you know, when an issue has been covered? Or what should an employee do when he or she finds a policy or procedure that isn't being followed? How should that be reported? Does anyone want to jump in, or do you want me to pick somebody?
Well, as far as the reporting, we in our compliance management system, under each policy, it states how they can notify us of any issues where people are not following policy or procedures. They can reach out to management, our compliance directly. Their manager can report that directly to the chief compliance officer through our ticketing system. They can report it through an employee voice portal, and that can be anonymous. Or they can contact our CCO directly, and his phone number is in the policy. So they have, you know, several ways that they can contact our department. So we can do some research, find out what's going on, and see why those policies are not being followed.
Mike, okay. I'll jump in
real
quick. So it's inevitable that at some point in time, a deficiency or nonconformity is going to be identified. It is so, Mike. So, of course, it always depends on the severity of the nonconformity, right? And the frequency of repeated offenses. So, you know, is this a one-off issue? Is this something that is reoccurring? And some things that, you know, our audience may want to consider for compliance trends would be to implement a formal training process for remediation that is tracked, that is measured on an organizational level. And then for an individual remediation, you know, training and coaching that is documented. I cannot stress that enough. I hear a lot, we talked to them. Well, is it documented? I mean, what is the consequence? How many times have you talked to them in the last 6 months about the same issue, right? So your corrective action related on an individual repeated nonconformity needs to be meaningful and ultimately results in termination if it's not resolved, right? I mean, we can't keep people, even if they're the number one best collector, if they have repeated offenses. And then for systemic issues, ensure that your remediation is prioritized. So, you know, none of us here are IT folks, but let's say you have a systemic issue, and you know everything is on fire in the IT world. Well, let's make sure that we can evaluate, again, I'm going to use the word risk, and prioritize any systemic nonconformities so that they can get corrected in a timely manner so that you're not having multiple infractions. And then finally, my final tip on this issue is when it comes to remediation, whether it's company-wide, whether it's an individual, whether it's systemic, is to make sure all of this is centrally tracked somewhere, because this should be reported to your board of directors or highest governing body, because it's their job to ensure that there's a closed-looped process when it comes to the remediation of compliance risk. I am now off my soapbox on that issue.
Does anybody else want to step up on it? It's warm. No? All right. Well, let me follow back up with Sarah for a second, because you mentioned the word meaningful, which I think is really important. But meaningful can also be sort of a subjective term. What is meaningful to you might not be meaningful to me. So how do you sort of determine, you know, how do you take that subjective term and make it objective as it relates to, you know, policies and procedures?
Yeah, so I think that this is an evaluation that should be done on a regular basis. Is the corrective action changing behavior? If your corrective action is not changing the behavior of your floor or the individual, then it is not meaningful. So if your policy is to give coaching and training 10 times about the mini Miranda before you do something about it, then perhaps it's not working, right? So maybe you need to suspend them. Maybe you need to ding their commissions. Maybe, now granted, when it comes to employee corrective action, you really have to look at your employment laws. And I'm not an employment law expert, so I just want to put that disclaimer out there. But sure. Those are the types of things that, you know, if it's not working, then you need to adjust, right? I often think about this with, you know, I'm a mother. And so if I keep explaining to my daughter the same thing 100 times and she's not getting it, then I need to adjust how I'm doing it. I need to take her phone away. I need to, you know, there's something I have to do, right, differently. And that's right. The same with your employees when it comes to corrective action and remediation as it relates to compliance nonconformities.
Got it. We can't just yell louder. That never works.
I mean, you can, but it usually does not. You're right.
Right. Alicia, is compliance with policies and procedures a binary state, meaning somebody is or isn't following them, or is it more of a sort of type of degree situation where you may be slightly not following them or very much not following them? How do you sort of assess it or view it?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, policies should always dictate what behavior is acceptable or unacceptable, in terms of if someone's just displaying the behaviors that you expect or not displaying the behaviors that you expect. So the risk that not following an element of a policy poses to the company may present differently depending on what part of the policy they're not following. So, for example, if you have a client that requires confirmation of multiple pieces of personal identifying information versus a company standard that requires only one piece of personal identifying information, and it's your risk assessment that confirmation of the one piece of PII is enough to avoid third-party disclosure. If the representative doesn't confirm the additional two pieces on that client line, there's a risk to the client, but the risk of third-party disclosure is not as high. So, I don't know that it's a situation where they're following or not following. They're clearly displaying the behaviors that you're expecting from the policy or not. But in terms of what that means to your company and the risk that you take on as a result of that noncompliance, that's going to differ.
Okay, makes sense. Paige, anything else you want to add on top of that?
No, sir. I believe that what Alicia said is true. That's what we do as well.
Yeah, I thought that was a great example. Nice way of explaining that, Alicia.
Thank you both. Thank you.
As a means of reminding everybody, if you have a question for our panels, you can type it in and we'll get to it. We do have one question that's come in so far, and it's wondering if there are any recommended training sites for SharePoint or any advice on sort of how to get started on it if you're not currently using it. Does anyone have any insider advice that they want to share on that?
So I do. Lynda.com, which I believe is now LinkedIn Learning. I believe that they just purchased it. They have a number of instructional videos and training and information on SharePoint and all of the different apps that come with SharePoint. They go through Excel and Microsoft Word, and you know, a lot of the Microsoft products, there's an abundant amount of training on lynda.com. And oftentimes, if your company does not offer that to you as a resource, I found that for some people, their local library, if you get a library card through there, they will offer that service, so you can then go online and use the service through your local library card. So that is my number one resource that I utilize when I want to understand, how do I do this, and I have no idea. I go to lynda.com, or now known as LinkedIn Learning.
And I swear I'm not a salesperson for SharePoint, but Sarah had mentioned earlier, you want to track all of your remediations. In SharePoint, or a system like that, you can track all of your remediations, easily look up, what remediations you have for what client, or how many times have you had a certain binding on any of your audits. You can also save all of your audits in there, your client MSAs, your vendor management program. So from a compliance standpoint, it does offer a lot of ways to save and organize things.
Okay. Are policies and procedures meant to be sort of living, breathing documents, you know, where a company can take feedback from any employee saying, hey, I think we should change X, Y, and Z because it's going to help us collect more money, or it's going to make us more efficient? You know, how do you sort of incorporate, not necessarily where someone's saying there's an issue, but, you know, where someone wants to sort of, you know, make suggestions and changes. Is it the same process for that?
I'll jump in here, Mike, on this one. So my initial thought on that is procedures can be tweaked if necessary. Policies, those are your company statements of what is acceptable and not acceptable. So what is acceptable should not change on a whim. That should be done through a thoughtful review, analysis, again, risk analysis. So if a collector comes up and says, hey, I bet if we, you know, did not ask for identifying information and just confirmed the first and last name, we'd get through these calls a heck of a lot faster. And operations, you know, we could get through more calls, blah, blah, blah. Let's just say that's, well, we're kind of using a silly example. But we shouldn't go change our policy because we all decided today that that's a great idea, right? Policies really should not change on the fly unless there's been a change in the law or a new litigation risk, or, you know, there's case law, obviously, that, you know, sometimes does affect certain things. But again, a lot of that type of stuff can be done in procedures. Procedures may change depending on if you implement technology, you know, and those things are living and breathing. And I do think change policies, I would say, should be reviewed at least annually, and maybe changes get made at that time unless something major happens. Let's say the CFPB's notice of proposed rules now that their final rules have been published in the Federal Register, and now you might do an overhaul of all of your policy statements, right? But until then, you know, you would probably not do that as frequently. Does that make sense to everyone? Maybe Alicia and Paige have another way of saying that.
No, I completely agree with everything you said, Sarah, and especially on the kind of the difference between procedure and policy. The only thing that I would add to it is, you know, if you have agents coming up to you and commenting on your policies and procedures and how they might change, that's great. That is, that's like the gold star, because that means they're engaged and they're reviewing the policies and procedures. They're using them as a resource. They're effective. They're part of the compliance management system that's working. So while you want to be careful about how much you're modifying based on representative feedback, because, you know, oftentimes they don't have the entire picture and everything that you're trying to control for, you still want to encourage that voice to continue. And there's a number of different ways that you can do that through, you know, I know Paige mentioned there's a lot of feedback that can go to compliance and that information is in their policies and procedures. But any way that you do it, you just want to make sure there's a communication channel so that your agents can give you that feedback and that consideration can be given. For the people that are utilizing these policies and procedures every day to stay compliant.
That's a great point, Alicia.
And I agree with Alicia and Sarah. The only thing I would add is if we can't make the change to the process, people the agents understanding why we have to do things the way we do them, just like, no, we just can't do that. But it helps me personally when I read a policy, why do we have to do it this way? What's the reasoning behind it? And then it helps them to understand that process.
Okay. And by the way, double points to Sarah for explaining the difference between policies and procedures, which is probably something I should have asked, 47 minutes ago. So thank you for clearing that up for everybody. So let's say we've got an agency that hasn't necessarily been checking their policies and procedures for a little while, but they're listening today, they want to get better, and they decide they need to sort of shape up. How would you recommend they get back on the horse in terms of checking to see whether the agency's employees are doing what they're supposed to be doing? Paige, I'll give you the first crack at that one.
All right. First of all, if you haven't been looking at your FAQs in a while, you want to review them to make sure that those FAQs are still accurate. You also, which we've already talked about this, you want to have it published in a place where everyone can easily access those policies, whether it be, you know, a shared drive or some type of system where everything is electronic. Also, refresher training. If, you know, you haven't been stressing the SOPs in a while, have a refresher training with your agents or the other departments. And then ask questions during meetings about the process. It can only be like 10 minutes of that meeting and say, hey, what about, you know, this process? What is the next step you do here? To make sure that they understand that process. And then again, exception reporting. Exception reporting to make sure that your controls are in place and working properly, or exception reporting where you know that there might be an issue with an agent handling account, that they have to do something physical to that account where there could be issues that arise. So those exception reporting is important.
Okay. Again, something we should have probably asked 20 minutes ago when we started talking about it, but exception reporting, for those that might not know exactly what that is, can you give us a little brief definition or example of it?
Oh, yes, sir. So we have quite a few. When agents are on a call, you know, if it is not documented, it does not happen. We've heard that a million times. So one of our exception reports goes into the system, and if it's dispositioned that they contact call and there's no notes on that report or no notes on that account, an exception pops up. So we know that this agent took a call at this time and there were no notes listed. So we send that out to operations and we're like, hey, can you reiterate that, you know, this needs to happen? And then we have other ones where there's a bad address on the account and the agent had received a payment. So they talked to the consumer, they took a payment and they did not get that good address. And that's important because sometimes you do have to send up follow-up letters. Sometimes, which should never happen, but if an agent for some reason decided to put a credit card number or social security number in the notes, we have that information. So you can make your system you know, work for you, that's great. You just come up with all these different exception reports, and if the controls are in place, it should be zero. If there's a possibility for human error, it will find those issues as well. And that would be trend analysis, where you see an increased number of defects and you're like, okay, what happened? There was a change to the process. So, you know, let's get that retraining done, or, you know, whatever the root cause may be.
Excellent. Thank you. Alicia, Sarah, anything you want to add on top of that?
The only thing that I would add is, so the next webinar needs to be internal audit and exception reports, because a lot of what Paige just talked about, that they're great examples of exception reports and things to build into your system. So I'm recommending that as well. I would say, in terms of just understanding where your policies and procedures are and if they're being followed, and trying to kind of reignite the review. As we've talked about throughout the webinar, we just want to make sure that you're focusing on the ones that have the most risk to your company. So, you know, if you have an FDCPA policy that's 10 years old and you haven't updated it, and, you know, there's been a number of cases in those 10 years, focus on that one, because that's going to have the widest scope and the most impact. So if there are ones that you haven't reviewed in some time and they have a very large reach and scope to your CMS, you want to focus on those ones first.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. We've only got a few minutes left, so if anybody has a question for our panel, this is probably your last chance to type it into to the Q&A button or the Q&A window on your control panel to get it asked before the webinar wraps up. You know, as with anything, you know, there can be too much of a good thing. So when it comes to reviewing policies and procedures, you know, how do you make sure that you're not sort of becoming a victim to what, you know, the cliche, the phrase I like to use is analysis paralysis, where you're spending so much time looking at things and not necessarily actually getting anything done. How do you sort of make sure you're finding that balance with, you know, with the risk levels and the policies and procedures and the analysis and the oversight that needs to get done on those issues?
Well, Mike, you build a compliance management system.
Sounds easy enough.
So, you know, a robust and functioning compliance management system that incorporates the four elements will help you balance that, right? And so if you have the board and director oversight, you've got your compliance program in place where you're doing your regular monitoring. If you've got your audit findings, you know, your compliance committee meeting regularly, these things are all part of your moving processes, right? So, you know, this does not need to be some super overwhelming task. It becomes part of your daily activities that is expected, right? Collectors or your agents begin to expect the feedback on their calls. They expect that you are listening. They, you know, operations expects that they're going to hear about exceptions that happen. Your IT software team is going to expect that when systemic nonconformities happen, that they're going to have to adapt and change, right? Sometimes, I think Paige was talking about it earlier, sometimes you think you're fixing one thing, well, you might break three things in the process, right? So if your compliance management system is working as a whole, these things are happening on a daily basis. Just like, let's just say we took the compliance word out of this, and we were talking about operations, if suddenly you didn't take any payments for a week, there would be meetings, there would be root cause analysis, and you'd be figuring out why you weren't taking any payments, right? It's the same exact thing. These things are just an everyday thing.
Got it. Okay. Good question that's been submitted. Does anybody have any recommendations for getting policies and procedures done when working managers won't write them? They're too busy. The too busy issue keeps pushing the issue back, and it's not getting done. How do you segment the work of putting these together to avoid tears? Great question.
It is a great question. I think Alicia might have an answer to that one.
I do. you know, I'm actually going through this right now with some processes that we've audited, and what we've agreed to is kind of a hybrid approach in terms of we will give you the overall template, the different sections that need to be completed, the questions that would control the content that's there, what we know to be, you know, occurring today, and kind of just have them fill in the blanks. So it's not such a overwhelming task for them to sit down and say, okay, I need to write policies and procedures on this, this, and this. Where do I start, right? And for me, it's always easier to edit somebody else's work or to build on somebody else's work than to just start from scratch. So I would say that's one recommendation that we found is extremely helpful. And then, you know, we also on my team have a documentation specialist for this reason. And I understand that not all agencies can have that role. So really utilizing your business owners with that structure defined already and with the information that they need to put into that template provides for an easier process for them.
See, I was hoping it was going to be suck it up, buttercup.
Or that.
You could say that, but it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Paige, Sarah, anything else you want to add on top of that question on how to get them, you know, how to get them done when the managers are reluctant to do them?
No, I think that was a great response by Alicia, and we have found that issue with some of our remediations where, especially where it's a client request, we have to, it's a hard due date, it has to be done like tomorrow, and sometimes our remediation auditor will just have to go and meet with them and physically write it down and have them review it and approve it. I'm not saying that's the right way to do it, but to prevent fears for our remediation auditor, yeah. But I like Alicia's way much, much better.
Desperate times, desperate measures situation.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing I would just like to, I think as compliance professionals, we often get frustrated with this task, and it's understandable why we get frustrated with this task, because, you know, it should not be the chief compliance officer's job to write every policy and procedure for your organization. There should be buy-in from the stakeholders across the organization. I think that that is pretty key to the success of your policies and procedures. However, the expectation that operations managers can write a policy and procedure, they just might not be able to, right? Like there's just people who can't just write like that, right? So Alicia's point about making it templated to be like a fill in the blank type of thing, that is a really great approach, because in their mind, in their role, this is not important. What's important to them is getting payments on the phone, right? And making sure that people are showing up on time and they're not, you know, they're actually there. So any way that you can help streamline the process, help them through the process, you know, I would advise on that. It is great if you can have someone who can be your documentation specialist. Most companies don't have that luxury, but, you know, making it templated, simple, or the other approach I have seen is have them write the procedure. So maybe the procedure is a workflow. Maybe that's how their mind works. And then you put the words to paper based on the procedure if it meets all your compliance requirements.
It's a good idea too. Well, we're just about out of time, but before I let everybody go, I'd like to go around the panel one more time and give each of our excellent panelists the chance to offer a summary of what they talked about today, any parting words of wisdom, maybe address something they didn't get a chance to talk about, but you know, but was a little tip or tidbit that they thought was worth sharing, but just to give them a chance to share some final words before we wrap up for today. So if they don't mind, Alicia, would you mind going first?
Sure, absolutely. I would say just in general, the questions that we've responded to today and a lot of what we talked about really just relates to having a fully integrated CMS and having, you know, your board management oversight interacting with your risk review that your policies and procedures are defining, you know, your internal auditing and monitoring corrective action, following up on those policies and procedures and having adequate training to teach the policies and procedures. So, I mean, it's hard to isolate one element of a CMS without talking about all of the different components that go into it. So if you remember anything from this policy and procedure webinar, is that all of these CMS elements are integrated and they're connected. And so, you know, you want to make sure that you're just looking at the kind of fuller scope of things as it relates to your CMS for some of your compliance program elements.
Very good information. Thank you. Paige, you're up.
Hi, Alicia had some great points, and yes, the compliance management system is extremely important and something that you can do if you're a smaller agency and you have not gotten into the compliance management system. Go to the CFPB guide on the CFPB website, and they will be able to tell you everything they would look for if they came to your organization, what your compliance management system needs to include. And again, everything that Alicia said.
Excellent. Thank you. Sarah? Yeah.
All right. So if you're just getting started on auditing your policies and procedures, step one, create a schedule. Create a schedule and hold yourself accountable. Start off with a limited scope if necessary. Only start with three of your highest risk items. Once you identify your rhythm and what you're doing, like with those and how you can improve it and maybe even streamline it, make a plan to add additional audits and monitoring controls, every 6 to 12 months, say, if you're a smaller agency. So step one, get that schedule started and start and hold yourself accountable, and you'll be on your way to building out a robust monitoring program of your policies and procedures.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, Alicia, Paige, Sarah, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. This was, you know, for something that might not be the most attractive of topics, you guys were very insightful and offered a ton of great information. So thank you very much. I really appreciate that on behalf of everybody who listened today. I also want to thank Ontario Systems one more time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.ontariosystems.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. One final reminder to fill out the feedback survey when you get a chance. It really helps me with future topics and speakers. I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future, as well as a recording of this event will be posted later today. Panel, awesome job. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. Everyone have a great day. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.